everybody. You're listening to episode 4 of Behind the Screens podcast. I'm Andrew, and I am the host for today. Say hi, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
And who are you guys? Oh. In case they forgot.
I'm David.
I'm Jen.
And I'm Zoe.
Okay, and today we're talking about the movie called The Lookout from 2007, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So we're going to go around the room and kind of just get a brief feel for how everyone enjoyed the movie or didn't enjoy the movie. I'll start with Jen.
I thought it was really good. I wasn't totally sure how much I would like it because I'm not typically into like heist and crime type of movies like mm-hmm. that, I guess. So I thought it was pretty good. It was really well-paced, I think.
Zoe?
I love Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He makes my heart go pitter-patter, so I loved it a lot.
Can you give us an example of what that would sound like, your heart?
That was a weak.
That was awful.
That was really bad. My heart feels just, it just goes pop, pop, pop. Yeah.
We're cutting that out for sure.
You asked me.
I know. I thought it was going to be a moment.
Well,
that was my fault.
Please insert some hard drumming sounds. Please do that.
We'll do. We'll do. David?
Yeah, I liked it. I was kind of on the same wavelength as Jen, where I was not sure how I was going to feel about it. Not because I don't like crime or thriller and drama movies like that, but more just because I think that the cover makes it look really cheesy and bad.
It does, I think. I agree.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised.
I was really hoping you were going to say you were on the same wavelength as me. And I was like, okay, good.
Does like, Joseph Gordon-Levitt also make your heart go pitter-patter, David?
I actually always call him Jordan Gosef Levitt by accident. And it really bothers me because I know that's not what it is and I'm not doing it to be funny. It's because I always think his name is Jordan. And then anyway, Andrew, what did you think about the movie?
I was also surprised. I didn't think it would be as thrillery and suspenseful as it was. I thought it'd be a lot more lighthearted. So I enjoyed it, I think.
Yeah. Do you want to do a quick plot overview, like a plot summary for people?
Yeah, sure. So for those who haven't watched the movie, but you should because this podcast will contain major spoilers, the movie The Lookout is about Chris Pratt, the character's name, not the actor. Gets kind of confusing you don't watch it.
It's about blockbuster actor Chris Pratt.
So the character Chris Pratt is a once promising high school athlete whose life is turned upside down following a tragic accident, which he could have prevented. As he tries to maintain his normal life, he takes a job as a janitor at a bank where he ultimately finds himself caught up in a heist.
Ooh.
So intense.
This is the last chance. If you have not watched it, go watch it now. Otherwise, spoilers ahead.
Hit pause and we will wait on this podcast.
And here we'll throw in a trailer just to refresh the memories for everyone who has seen the movie.
Let's start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going. Now that's the end. Now what happened before that?
Once upon a time, I had the perfect life. Now I have to write everything down just to make it through the day.
Any problems this week?
Nope.
Crying? Raging?
Nope.
Taking your meds?
I want you to write down bank extra clean in your little notebook.
That's Chris Pratt.
My friend would like to buy you a drink.
Gary Spargo? We know each other. I was in your sister's class.
I heard what happened to you. And everyone was talking about how you woke up this other guy.
Were you with a lady tonight? Where'd you meet her?
Gary introduced me to her.
Toast.
Family, right? What's this?
Guess this is a project I've been working on.
Why are you taking pictures of a bunch of banks?
Because I'm going to rob one of them.
What is this?
You know, I need your help.
You want me to rob the bank?
Don't you want your old life back?
You can't give that to me.
I was 3 years ahead of you and I looked up to you. I'm going to help you.
How?
Whoever has the money has the power. On the night, your job will be the most important job of all. You're the lookout.
Look, I can't do this.
Go in there, do your job, and shut your mouth. Where's the money?
Start at the end, work backwards.
What are you doing here?
I have the money, I have the power!
All right, so that was the trailer for The Lookout. Before we get into too deep conversation about the movie, let's go around and ask everyone what their favorite movie revolving around a heist is. Zoe, we'll start with you on this one.
I guess... does The Usual Suspects have a heist or is that just a crime? Because I really don't think I've seen a heist movie.
I've never seen The Usual Suspects.
I'm going to say that it does, maybe. So, favorite crime movie, though, is definitely Usual Suspects.
Yeah, see, the problem here is that The Usual Suspects is, like, this big, important movie for people to have watched, and I also have not seen it. I don't want to admit to that.
Oh, dear.
So no one can call you on it if you haven't
seen
it.
Okay, then yes, it's the most iconic heist movie.
Is it?
The Usual Suspects is?
Yeah.
How does it end?
Kaiser Sose is then you gotta bleep it out because it's a big old spoiler.
Okay, all right, David, what's your favorite heist movie?
My favorite heist movie, well, I have a few. I really like heist movies. I also think that I could do a heist, for the record. That's just a fun fact about me, is that I could for sure pull it off, and I probably have, and I'm just not telling you.
So if any banks get robbed anytime soon, we know where to go looking.
This is evidence. This is David's confession tape.
Yeah, exactly. I did it. Oh, man. I can't believe I just said that. anyway, I really like a lot of them. But the one that I have most recently enjoyed watching is Baby Driver.
Yes.
Which is a movie that I like and Andrew does
not
like.
What?
Yeah.
I knew it.
Andrew doesn't like it. I heard him grunt and growl and snarl when I said I liked that movie in class the other day.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it's like really good, and it's like the music and the pacing of the movie, and I really like the characters and the colors, and I just want to know why Andrew doesn't like it. We're going to air out our beef right now.
You know, I like the music. It's very, very good music-wise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the story's plausible in any way that he met this girl like, what, 4 or 5 times, and then she's willing to wait like 25 years and while he's in prison.
What? Yeah, spoiler! I've never seen it.
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
Yes, okay. I will agree that there are some parts that are unrealistic, but I think there are other movies that are more unrealistic that we could talk about. But yeah, okay. Fair point. I see how that could take away from the experience from this fantastic, objectively fantastic movie. Let's move on to someone else.
Okay, Jen, what's your favorite movie or favorite heist movie?
So like I said already, I don't watch a whole lot of heist crime movies, but I recently watched Ocean's 11 for the first time, and I really liked that.
Yeah, Ocean's 11, all the Ocean's movies except for the middle one are good.
How many are there?
3. 12 is not good.
Aren't they coming out with a new one?
Yeah, they're coming out with like a female Ocean's 11, which is called Ocean's 9, I think.
Yeah.
And has like a bunch of famous people in
it. Got Rihanna in it. That's my favorite one already.
Mindy Kaling is in it.
Yeah. Also Sandra Bullock.
There's a whole bunch of other awesome female actresses who are going to be doing that. And also Ocean's 11 is based off of like an old movie with like super famous actors. Why am I blanking on the name of it?
Is it also called Ocean's Eleven?
Yeah, why wouldn't it be called
Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin. It's a 1960 movie.
They're pretty big. Yeah.
And like that one has terrible ratings. So,
really?
Yeah, they brought it back with a new one. There's another really good heist movie that I just saw in theaters called Logan Lucky that has Channing Tatum and Adam Driver. Did anybody see that?
No. I have not yet.
Yeah, you guys should for sure watch that. It's very Ocean's Eleven-esque, I would say.
There was a really bad one that was, which I, if you are into bad heist movies.
Like the heist was bad or the movie was bad?
It was like, it wasn't even bad. It was just like an old man kind of movie. And it was like Zach Galifianakis and it was hilarious.
Oh, and his wife?
Yeah.
I saw previews for that. What was that called?
Oh, God. What was it? Fact check. Look it up.
Okay, well, I'm looking it up. Okay. Andrew can say his favorite heist movie.
My favorite heist movie also involves Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Inception.
Ooh, oh, that is a heist movie.
Because they're like good technically answer. Stealing info from his brain, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, getting like another level, like a deeper level of heist. But yeah, I think like that was like a big film in terms of like understanding like the people, like people's dreams and brains and all that kind of stuff. Like I remember kind of being confused like the first couple times watching it.
Zoe, the movie you're thinking of, your favorite movie, is Keeping Up with the Joneses, which also has Isla Fisher, who was in this movie.
No way.
I don't like Isla Fisher.
I thought her name was Isla Fisher.
Well, that's it might mistake.
Be.
It might
be. Until last night when my girlfriend is like, that is not her name. It's like Island. And I was like, oh, okay.
Pronounces it. And then David's just like, I've been pronouncing it Island this whole time. That would have been bad.
I just got to say, any movie that starts with a teen driving usually doesn't end up well.
Yeah. When I saw the movie start with this whole scene, I was like, oh, there's a drunk driving commercial before the movie starts.
Like...
Starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah.
Jordan Gosef-Levitt. Yeah, that was like everyone had to know what was about to happen.
Yeah.
All car accidents in movies. Like I've never seen a movie where the car accident is a complete surprise because it always has like the – it always shows the side view of the driver right before there's a car accident. Like that's a fact. I've never been surprised by a car accident in a movie.
It was just like you –
knew it was coming.
You kind of knew it was coming, but I think – for me, at least, they like teased it where they stopped for a minute to look at the, I guess, the fireflies.
Which did not look like fireflies.
No, it didn't at all.
I was like, why does this guy have terrible CGI dandruff?
Like, I think they stopped on like a railroad track or something.
Yeah, that's what I also thought
like,
was going to happen.
Oh, they're going to get nailed by this train that doesn't have a light on for some reason. And they kept driving. I'm like, damn it, I missed it. Like they're not gonna get in an accident, and then they like nail this combine or whatever.
Yeah, that was pretty nuts. Also, when the characters in the backseat go turn on the lights, and he doesn't, I was like, ugh, why do they have to be the ones who are about to die?
Oh man.
Nope.
Yeah. And also, like, why are you driving down a country road with no lights on? Like, I get the fireflies and stuff, but like, dude, are you trying to die?
Because he's like. Like a cool teen.
And he's like, yeah, but cool teens are dumb.
But they're invincible.
But they're dumb.
Like at first I was like, oh, this kind of sucks because like they just show that little snippet from his high school life. And then it's kind of this thing where you're like, oh yeah, he like caused a super bad accident and like he's such an idiot and like that's what you feel about him. But you're pretty much thrown right into his character, Chris Pratt, being this guy who you feel bad for a little bit, even though he did something pretty stupid. But then later on, when it's like showing like who he was in high school, I was like, oh my God, he was a dick. He was like a jock and like probably like a super mean guy.
Yeah.
Living the life. Nice cars.
So
super rich family.
Attractive women.
The
shooting guns.
The Lookout is actually directed by Scott Frank. And I'm pretty sure this was his first film he ever directed.
Yeah, it is. Did you look up Scott Frank a little bit?
I did. Okay. Shocking. He wrote the movie Logan.
What?
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
Which one? What?
Like the new Wolverine.
Whoa.
Yeah.
He's known for writing it. He's also known for The Wolverine, another Wolverine movie. Marley and Me.
What?
totally the same type of movie.
Yeah. Exact same.
I was actually so shocked because I also looked up Scott Frank, and I looked him up on IMDb and also on Rotten Tomatoes, mm-hmm. and there's a mistake on Rotten Tomatoes where it says that he was the screenwriter for Saving Private Ryan.
Oh. Oh, did it?
And I was like, oh my God, he did Saving Private Ryan and then came to Winnipeg to film The Lookout? But no, he did not.
Oh, man.
So that's a mistake. But, I mean, he's still got like a lot of pretty notable titles to his credit for sure.
Okay, so just a little fun fact for everybody. The entire reason I am in CRECOM is because of Jeff Daniels.
Really?
What?
Yeah.
What?
Why?
He was, he's in this show called The Newsroom.
Okay.
And he plays this like news anchor. And I'm sure you've all seen that scene where this guy's like sitting in a chair and he like describes why America isn't great anymore.
Yeah, I've seen
I haven't.
Just throw it in.
You know what? Good call.
Yeah.
We'll throw it in here.
Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying
yes.
Let's talk about
fine.
Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of her paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it anytime he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey,
and with a straight face, you're gonna tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only three categories: number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite?
Threw it in. What was that great?
Oh, wow.
Is that like, it's kind of inspirational, right?
America isn't great anymore. He's right.
So, yeah, like, I watched that show and he was this, like, TV anchor. And I'm like, wow, you know, this stuff would be cool. So I looked up, like, that kind of stuff in Winnipeg.
Like, Bean making the video or like?
No, like, kind of like his, like, producers and stuff, like the people who would, like, research all that kind of stuff for him.
Huh.
So I'm like, this would be kind of cool to do for a living. And then I found CRECOM. And now here I am.
Look at that.
Wow, thanks,
talking
Jeff.
About it.
Yeah, so this
full
is
circle.
All because of Jeff Daniels.
Jeff Daniels, who has a great character in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Arguably the most likable.
Okay, but was he a passable blind person?
Enough.
I'll be honest. For the first couple scenes, I couldn't quite tell. Like, I knew there was something there, but, like, he didn't have his sunglasses on at first when he was, like, in the kitchen making food and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden later on he did, so I was like, okay, this guy's clearly blind. But in the beginning, I almost couldn't tell.
I just, like, I didn't like what he was doing with his eyes. Like, to me, it just seemed like he was just looking off to the side. And, like, it didn't, like, come off as, like, a blind person to me.
Yeah, I mean, I have not actually interacted with too many blind people in my life, so I'm not too sure what it's like exactly. I did read on IMDb trivia though that apparently he like spent some time like at a center for blind people, I believe,
okay,
to be able to like prepare for the role. So I'm not 100% sure where that was going. They for sure like were trying to play it off of like in the movie they're trying to play it off as like, is he blind? Is he not blind? In the beginning,
yeah.
I think
yeah.
a little bit, but yeah, I'm not too sure if it was convincing or not. I'd like have no reference point other than movies.
Yeah, I think he like, yeah, I didn't really like, I wasn't distracted because sometimes I've seen movies where like they're distractively like bad at acting as a blind person. Where it's like, you're stop that. But no, it was good, and like it was like he had been. Like, he went blind later in life, right? Because there was this big accident, like, when that was revealed at the later in the movie.
I
was
yeah, because like, he made meth.
He made meth.
Yeah, what a troubled guy.
Yeah, because when I first saw it, I was like, aw, just a big teddy bear, Jeff Daniels.
Yeah, I thought Lewis was just like this super good, like, come hang out with me, you troubled soul. And then he's like, I have problems too.
Yeah, he's like, I made the meth.
He was actually, his character was like an Easter egg from Breaking Bad.
Wow.
No, I'm just kidding.
Then,
he had a pretty good line. I liked a lot of the stuff that he said. I liked when he said that everything is a story. Stories make us make sense of the world. I thought that was a pretty good quote from Lewis. And then he also had that great moment where he tells Chris Pratt not to go see his family anymore.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of telling of how Lewis knew what's up the whole time.
Yeah, he almost seemed more of like a father figure to Chris than his actual dad did, because his dad kind of seemed a bit like a dick.
Yeah,
to
his
me.
Dad sucked.
His whole family was pretty awful.
That is true.
His sister was the kind of nice.
Oh, yeah, she was sweet, her baby and stuff. And then that's one thing that I was wondering with like Gary, the guy who asked Chris to be part of the whole heist. Did he actually date his sister?
I think no. That's my vote.
Yeah, yeah, I would say no.
I think he just kind of like knew who he was, mm-hmm. and then just kind of targeted him.
Yeah, Gary. It just comes in and like completely uses Chris Pratt, and Chris is like fine with it when he finds out.
Oh yeah.
And then Gary's the worst guy in the world.
But Gary has the best line of the whole movie, where he says, "Damn, it must be pretty cool to be Chris Pratt," and no one even thinks, "Hey, there's an actor named Chris Pratt," because Chris Pratt was active like during this movie. Like he had some roles, like not notable.
I wonder why he chose the name Chris Pratt.
Yeah, wouldn't they like check?
Hey, you think you'd Google, like, especially like the main characters you're gonna use, you'd think you'd Google their names.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like maybe he knows Chris Pratt. Maybe this is actually about Chris Pratt.
Dedicated.
But yeah, maybe this is like a real life Chris Pratt story.
It's a biopic. Oscar bait biopic.
I'd be okay with that.
The Lookout 2007.
Goes from janitor to bank to training dinosaurs.
Mm.
Pretty crazy.
It's a good life.
Yeah.
Okay, so how believable was it that, you know, like how he had to like write down like his daily routine and all that. Like he basically just like carried that notebook with him everywhere, but he was still allowed to drive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, what the heck?
Yeah, I was really confused because even at one point he said, I can pick up a bottle or a glass with this hand, but sometimes I can't drink out of it.
Yeah.
But then how are you able to drive a car with both hands all the time?
And for me,
if you can't take a drink, right?
Yeah, no, totally. And for me, like, one of the other big things, I was like, you seem pretty distraught about this accident also. And, like, you're pretty cool driving. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I thought it would have been, even if it wasn't for the whole thing where he has, like, mobility issues. Like, on top of that, he also killed two people and some and like really hurt somebody that he loved, but he's just fine driving right away. Yeah, I'm not too sure. There were a few like plot holes in the movie or like things that like just kind of rubbed me a little bit the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
Like the driving thing was one of them. Another thing was like I felt like they introduced characters into the movie and then just like never talked about them again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the doctor woman that he meets at the restaurant.
Yeah, I was very confused by that.
She shows up in the first 20 minutes of the movie, and I'm like, this is an important character. Never see her again.
And she's like a notable actor. Like, I was like, oh, who's she? I know her from somewhere. And then she like wasn't even there.
Yeah, and then also like, I got to think of her name again. Because I want to say Isla, but it's not Isla.
Lovely.
Isla. Yeah, lovely. I'll just say lovely.
Lovely lemons.
Lovely lemons. She's just like in the movie, he's in love with her. And then there's no like revelation moment of like, oh, she was in on it or anything like that. He's just like, don't talk about her anymore. Not in the second, like not in like the third act of the film pretty much.
Mm-mm.
But like, was she with Gary?
That's what I thought.
Yeah, they were definitely.
Yeah, well, because he was with that other girl, and then
she
was with them, and then she, like, bought him a drink or something, right?
I thought Gary was, like, paying her to have sex with
him.
To be honest, possibly.
Because, like, we see that one scene where Gary, like, comes up behind her and, like, gives her a hug.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they give each other looks and stuff.
Yeah, so I kind of got the impression that, like, she was in on it, in, like, kind of manipulating Chris Pratt.
And I was like so confused because he kept on talking about like going to high school and stuff with him. And I was like, has anybody gone to high school with Chris Pratt? Were all these people lying to him?
Plot twist, Chris Pratt was homeschooled. And he's like,
he invented the whole history.
Yeah. And I like how they just like took over that old man's house.
I felt so bad for that old man. And then Bones, who is this guy? Yeah. He looks like the guy Gene from Simmons. Rush, but like really unhealthy. He comes in, he's like, who are these people in my house? And then Bones just gets up and probably murders him in the other room.
Also, does Bones ever talk?
He does once.
What does he say? I do not remember him talking.
When Chris digs up the two bags of money or whatever, and then he passes the one to Bones, and then Bones says, bring out the other one.
What if he was just like Guardians of the Galaxy and he was just like, I am Bones. That's the only thing he says the whole movie.
That would be funny. Because if you look up that actor, he looks nothing like Bones in real life. Like, it was weird. I looked him up. I forget his name. But, like, just give him a quick Google. It's crazy.
He's pretty scary looking in the movie.
In the movie, he's scary looking in like regular life. He's just a friendly old guy.
I felt like Chris was just asking for trouble this whole movie. I know he's got, like, problems and stuff that he's dealing with, but I'm like, there are many red flags right now. Yep. And you are not getting any of them.
Mm-mm. But I think like, because Gary kind of like does tell him that like his parents will say no to the money, it kind of like relates to him and like shows him that like people don't really trust him.
Yeah,
which I think is why he kind of goes along with it at first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but he gets his restaurant in the end. So
I was also very confused about that part. Yeah. It just kind of seemed like thrown in there a little bit to me.
How they got the restaurant?
Yeah. And like even just the whole restaurant in general. Because like I know they kind of brought it up throughout the movie, but it just seemed random to me.
Yeah, like why a restaurant?
I don't know why like a blind man and someone with amnesia like would want a restaurant or be allowed to like run a restaurant.
And also lose your lunch.
Hilarious. Like,
what? That's
Jeff Daniels pitched that for sure. I was like, hey, I got this great idea.
That was funny.
I didn't recognize him.
No?
Who? No, Jeff Daniels. I don't know why. I did not catch that was him. I mean, like I knew it was him like when I saw the name.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, yeah, I didn't realize that was him. I was really, like, mad the whole movie because I was like, who is Gary? I have seen Gary before.
I've never seen Gary.
And I, like, recognized his face. So then afterwards, his name is Matthew Good, mm-hmm. which is not a name that I recognized.
But he plays the
boyfriend, Secret Service agent in Chasing Liberty.
Which I've never is seen that.
What?
Seen
a that. Very old movie that is not very good.
In more recent movies, he's in The Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
And Imitation Game.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why I know him.
Yeah, he's like the rival kind of like code breaker for Benedict Cucumber Patch there.
Yeah, I just wanted to lead with Chasing Liberty as the milestone movie.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I didn't recognize him at all. But.
So what was everyone's favorite scene? Like the one that kind of like warmed your heart a little bit.
Ooh, warmed the heart.
Warmed.
Well, mine was probably when they were just, like, in the kitchen. David kind of brought this one up already, but when he says that stories help us make sense of the world or something like that, and then mm-hmm. he says to start from the end because that's how you make sense of a story, I kind of liked that because I never actually thought about starting from stories at the end. And to be honest, that would probably be helpful for me because I'm really bad at writing things. And starting at the end is probably helpful to try to come up with the storyline a little bit. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
I loved that that's what like came back at the end to help him like save the day.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, out of all things that they could have brought back, I was like, okay, I love that. It's like that bit of wisdom that that Lewis gave.
Good stuff.
What was your heartwarming moment, Zoe?
I really liked the part where they were getting like the bank loan for the restaurant, and then Jeff Daniels was like, we're gonna name sandwiches after people we admire, and then they were like to the bank person, we'll name one after you, what's your name? And he's like, Reuben. I love that. I was like, yeah, really funny. Yeah, that was good.
I think my favorite was when he's at the bar and I think the day before he had seen Gary use the pickup line, I thought I was good looking.
Oh, that is a so great cute pickup line.
But then you came in or something like like something like that, and then he tried it on that girl. But he didn't end it, and he's just like, I thought I was good looking. And the girl's like, I'm sure you do.
Yeah, that was really funny.
Also, my other one, this isn't like a heartwarming thing. This is like the opposite of that. But when he's talking to, I can't remember who it is, but they say something about you don't ever have to worry about that stuff. And he's talking about like having a kid. I think it was Deputy Donut.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And he's just like, yeah, you don't have to worry about that stuff. And then you just kind of see this look in his eyes that he's like, oh, yeah, I probably can't have kids. And it's so sad. It kind of broke my heart for a second.
Deputy Donut was also another great character.
He was precious.
actually might fight with Jeff Daniels as the best character in the movie.
A great scene was when Chris Pratt is taking photos of the bank vault, and then he was like, what are you doing? He was like, let me get a picture of you in it. My dad took a picture of me giving someone a speeding ticket. I was like, Deputy Donuts is precious as hell.
And then what happens to precious people at the end of this movie?
He got dead.
Dead.
He got dead.
Moments after having a child.
Oh my God, that actually killed me. That's so sad. Oh.
This movie, just ups and downs and roller coasters. Actually, the more that I think about it, this movie has so many moving parts to it that, like, I forgot about. Mm-hmm. Like, the doctor is there and then not there. And then there's the part with, like, Kelly, like, the girl in the passenger front passenger seat of the accident that's going on. And then there's the relationship with his parents. And then the relationship with the girl. And then his relationship with his cop. And then his relationship with Lewis, the blind guy. And then they're starting a restaurant. And then his relationship with his school. And then the problems he has in his daily life. And, like, there's so much going on. Yeah, and his boss, like, there's so many things that are happening in this movie, and it's about a heist. It's not even about any of those things.
Yeah,
it's
about a heist. Like, the heist was such a small part of it, too. Like, kind of. Like, I mean, it was a big part, but, like, it was
centered around that, but other stuff seemed more important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, it looks like it's a heist film, which it for sure is, but, like, there's definitely, like, a lot of other things going on. And I wonder what it would have been like if they kind of, like, stuck to one of those smaller aspects of it. Mm-hmm. And, like, ran with one of them instead of a lot of them at the same time.
I was kind of hoping for, like, some sort of resolution with whatever the girl that was, like, in the car with him.
Yeah, Kelly. I think that's her name. I hope I'm not wrong.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
I think you're right.
Perfect.
But, like, because we don't really know if that's actually her.
It's got to be.
Is it?
Yeah, it's I was confused because there's, like, that dream thing, and then he wakes up and, like, sees her. So I'll be honest, at the beginning, I kind of thought she was one of the people who died.
I did, too.
And then when she came, like, in his dream or whatever that was, I was like, oh, is she alive or dead? And then, I don't know.
And they were like, what is the most freaky and weird spot we can put this dream sequence? Mm-hmm. And then they're like, Winnipeg Millennium Library.
Yeah, that was funny. Man, I still can't believe Joseph Gordon-Levitt was in Winnipeg. Like, I saw him in front of like that scene where it showed a bus and it showed City Place in the background. I freaked out when I saw Winnipeg in this one.
There were so many Winnipeg spots in this one.
This one was very recognizably Winnipeg.
It was also filmed in Harney, Manitoba.
I don't even know where that is.
I've never heard of it.
Apparently, it's called Harney, Manitoba, and it was miscredited as Hartney, Manitoba.
What?
I thought it was.
Or the other way around.
I thought it was Hartney, Manitoba, misspelled as Harney.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It was miscredited. That's the point.
And it's like, come on. Credits, it was spelled wrong.
That's funny.
Okay, the verdict is it is Hartney, Manitoba.
Oh, okay.
That's the correct way?
That is what Wikipedia says.
Mm-hmm.
So, should we trust Wikipedia?
Who knows? Maybe Wikipedia is like quoting from the credits of this film for the information.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's Hartney, Manitoba.
Hartney.
Miscredited, according to Zoe. As Harney, Manitoba.
According to IMDb.
IMDb trivia.
That was a fun fact on IMDb.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you guys have any other, like, I feel like I recognize so many spots during this movie.
I don't know why. I really didn't. Like, I recognized street signs and, like, the Millennium Library, but other than that, I was just kind of watching it. I guess I wasn't particularly looking for it, I guess.
Okay, well, they had inside of Millennium Library. Outside of Millennium Library, that's where the skating rink was. But apparently that looks very different now, though, from what I understand.
Yeah, kind of.
Like, the outside, I was having a hard time, and then my girlfriend's like, no, like, it was a little bit more of an open space beforehand. Mm-hmm. But I guess they changed it up. And then what else was there?
Well, I know there was, like, Cumberland Street was one that I noticed, and
That's where the apartment was.
114 Market, there was, I think that's where the bar was.
Yeah, does anybody know which bar that is?
I'm not sure. I recognize the, like, little sign that was in the window, but I cannot remember what it is.
I kind of recognize the outside, but I
just can't remember the name of whatever bar that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had inside of the Peasant Cookery, That's what his meeting with Janet was, the restaurant in the beginning. And then they had the Stella's on Grant.
Yeah, like inside Stella's.
And they didn't even change like the menu or anything like that. It actually said Stella's Cafe.
That's awesome. Actually hilarious because I was there like the day before I watched this movie and I did not recognize that.
Yeah. So a lot of like cool spots. Andrew, did you have anything else?
Well, 114 Market is the Saddlery.
Yeah, I don't actually know.
I've never heard of it.
I've heard people talk about it. I've never been there though.
Yeah. I don't think I've been there. I just recognize the sign, but
yeah, I've never heard of it. It looks good.
Chris Pratt's house is like a house on Wellington Crescent that I've driven
by. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
That one's
his rich neighborhood. Ugh.
I tried so hard to look for Winnipeg in this, and I saw nothing. I saw the Millennium Library in the first skating scene. That was it.
That's it?
Yeah. Why? It's just not my thing, noticing cities clearly. Like, I was like, at one point, I'm like, I'm not even going to pay attention. I'm just going to pay attention to the background and see what part of Winnipeg it is. Nothing. No. Absolutely nothing.
I feel like this one, I was like, it's Winnipeg.
Yeah.
What is going on? How can people not tell?
Yeah.
One thing that I was interested about was because it was filmed in Winnipeg and in Manitoba, they had that like cab scene where Lovely is driving away in a cab, and it was a yellow cab.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I don't think Winnipeg has any yellow cabs. Do we have any yellow cabs?
I don't think so.
I've only ever seen yellow van, like cabs and taxis here, not a car.
So it made me wonder, is there a spot where you can get like yellow, like a yellow cab for movies specifically in Winnipeg? Or did they just like bring one?
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Or did they like paint one yellow?
They probably painted one.
Yeah.
They just like bought a car, painted it yellow, and threw a taxi sign on the top?
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, it's not probably not that expensive.
Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking, what if they like drove it from somewhere? Where's the nearest spot with a yellow taxi that they would drive from?
Hmm. You drove all the way from New York.
Yeah, maybe.
Still has like a New York hot dog in the backseat. I don't know. What's a New York cab like? Just iconic.
I've never been to New York.
Every New York cab has a hot dog in it.
It's an old hot waiting dog. For
you. Zoe knows. Zoe's been to New York, guys.
Yeah. It comes out of the armrest in the middle.
Gross.
Just the hot dog, no bun.
Yeah. Well, I did my first heist in New York, you know.
Did you?
Yeah, because I have also done a heist. David.
Uh-oh. Jen, no. Have you done a heist?
I mean, I feel like I'm the only innocent one in this room.
Because I watched this with my roommates because they were like, you watch movies every week and you never let us watch them with you. Because I was kind of like, oh, all these movies are going to be kind of embarrassing to watch. But this was the first one where I was like, meh, my roommates might actually like it. So we all watched it and they had some very interesting things to say. And
do you want to share some of those things?
I will clean it up a bit for the podcast.
Oh, my.
This is a quote from my lovely roommate, CJ. Know why movies from Winnipeg suck? Because every day the actor wakes up and goes, oh, shit, I'm in Winnipeg. And that is the clean version.
I believe your roommate is wrong. This movie was good. I really like this one.
It was good.
This one also has a really good rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Certified fresh. 87%.
Wow.
That's impressive.
Not bad at all.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Or like, because the first time I noticed that it was Winnipeg was like when he was walking out of, Chris Pratt was walking out of his like special school. Mm-hmm. And like, it says like school like of Kansas, like on the side of the building, but it was just something about like the snow and the ground. I was like, this is Winnipeg. And then I was like, oh, I can tell it's Winnipeg. And my roommate goes, yeah, because it's disgusting. I was like, you have a bad attitude.
And then savages.
Yeah, I kicked him out. But yeah. It was, because like, is that school, where was the school, like in Winnipeg?
I have no idea.
Because I feel like I've seen it, but I think they must have just put like of Kansas on it. Because did everyone have like kind of a Kansas accent in the movie? Because I didn't really notice.
I wouldn't say so.
No, I didn't notice anything.
Mm-hmm. But I feel like they should have had more of an accent.
Does anybody know where the bank was? That must have been
that
in
was
Harney.
In, yeah, Harney.
Or Hartney. Oh, no.
I don't know.
Miscredited in the podcast.
Shoot.
Yeah. Yeah, I was pretty interested in understanding where this bank was because I felt like that was such like a perfect small town little bank for it to be. Shout out to the locations manager for this film, Bernard Nardi.
Wow!
Is it really?
Yeah, that's the guy that I interviewed for my article for the magazine.
No way.
Yeah, so pretty cool guy. And I saw his name in the credits. I was like, no way. That's pretty cool.
I'm a big Bernard Narby fan.
I looked up Hartney big Museum, and I believe the bank is the Hartney Museum.
Yeah, that's what I heard on IMDb. They put it on.
Interesting.
That's not a real bank.
Yeah, it looks like a very like small, like kind of like old, like Western almost kind of bank.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I think it fit.
Yeah.
Good job, Hartney, Manitoba. I've never heard of you before now, but you're doing good work.
Yeah, they got good stuff. I thought that like the whole culvert scene at the end there, I thought that was a pretty good spot to, like he had buried the money.
Oh yeah, yeah, inside of the culvert. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like that ending where they had to like revisit that location. I thought there was going to be more of a thing where like he said that he didn't remember, but he did remember and he didn't have to write it down in his notebook, but then he did and then they ended up back there. The shotgun in the bag though.
I was not expecting any guns in like the bank heist scene, which like I don't know why. Like I gasped when I saw the gun and then my roommates were like, really, Zoe, you think they're not going to bring a gun to a bank heist? And I was like, I don't know. I just wasn't expecting it, Joseph. Like, I was shocked. I've never seen... I just wasn't expecting a gunslinging Joseph Gordon-Levitt in this one.
I had a hard time recognizing who was who and what was going on in that like whole like gun sequence.
A little bit.
Shots were being fired. People were screaming and falling to the ground. And then, all of a sudden, Gordon Joseph Levitt runs out of the bank. Into a car, drives away, and I'm like, okay, I have no idea who is dead except for the cop. They made that very clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think that, like, third bad guy died.
I assume everybody who was not in the movie after that must have been dead.
Yeah.
So that includes the doctor was dead, Lovely was dead.
Yeah.
Oh, and then when he gets back to the house and he calls Lewis.
Yeah.
And he's like, are you okay? And he's like, why wouldn't I be okay? And he goes, why are the lights on? And then that, like, that's the tell. That was super cool.
I don't know if, like, I'm not sure if Chris Pratt would, like, recognize that, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's true. That might not be in his character. Because
I don't know.
Zoe's looking confused right now.
I'm kind of confused. Did I fall asleep?
Lewis is blind, so he wouldn't have the lights on.
Right.
Because he can't see.
Right.
So when he shows up at home,
right,
he sees the lights are on in the window.
Oh.
So then he's like, the guys beat me back to the apartment.
Oh, okay, shit.
Because the lights are on, because Lewis wouldn't turn the lights on.
Shit, that's really smarter than I am. Wow. Okay.
And this guy has suffered bad injuries to his brain.
Yeah, I feel like it might be plausible, though, because of because of how long he's lived with Lewis, that like maybe he comes home all the time and the lights are off.
That's true, that's true.
So he's dying.
It's been a long day. Okay.
And when Chris Pratt like is deciding which bag has the shotgun and which one doesn't, I like couldn't remember if I had seen him tag one of the bags. I'm like, crap, did he just pick the wrong bag? Like, I had no idea.
I also thought that was gonna happen. I thought he was gonna go like shoot and there's gonna be no gun and I was gonna be like, ugh.
That would have completely changed the movie.
I got weird, like, Memento meets Fargo vibes out of this movie. Like, I'd be watching it, and I'd be like, kind of Fargo-y, like, when it showed, like, the white and the snow and stuff. And then got Memento with the writing down, and I don't know. It just reminded me of a lot of other movies.
I haven't seen either of those movies.
Oh, well, very crime-ridden.
So I'm reading somewhere, and it says that Lovely Lemons was used by Gary to seduce Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that makes sense, I think.
I feel like I know that Chris was being, like, motivated by, like, a lot of, you know, from places where Gary was, like, really pushing him, where, like, he was bothered, like, his dad doesn't trust him with money, for example, or what are you going to do with your life? You want your old life back, blah, 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 blah. But, like, I mentioned this earlier. I still cannot get over the fact that he goes into the basement. He sees they're scheming to rob a bank. He sees photos of himself. And then he's still like, yeah, I'm going to go along with this.
Yeah.
Like, he has to feel some sort of, like, feeling of betrayal. But it must really speak to his character and how, like, crappy he feels about his life if he's, like, willing to give it up. And then he has like a quick moment of guilt and revelation mm-hmm. when the cop comes back and apologizes yeah. and he wants to stop. Yeah. And then Gary frickin' just clocks him. So
oh,
that
man.
I personally hated Officer Donut.
What?
Why?
Okay, at first, like, he's like that really annoying friend that like, he just can't say no to. And then he doesn't do his job. Like, he's like, you see that scene where he's like hanging out with Chris in the bank, like hanging out for quite a while, eating donuts.
Yeah.
It's like, dude,
he's
you're
taking care of Chris. But,
dude, you're a cop.
It's a small town.
Again, what's hurt?
What do you think is going on?
I don't know, man. Like, just do your job, man. Like, I he was just annoying to me.
He died on the job.
Yeah,
have some respect.
Was he not doing his job when he shot 3 out of the 5 criminals, Andrew, before dying?
That was the only redeeming moment for Officer Donut.
Man,
I was
he's
so
a hero.
Mad when he came back. Like, obviously that needed to happen for like there to be a turning point in the movie. But when his car pulled up, I'm like, ugh, you're going to be the one who, like, screws everything up.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that Lewis might come back for a moment to, like, save the day.
Yeah.
You know, when he was like, because Chris called him right before the heist was about to start when he mm-hmm. felt, like, really bad about it.
Oh, yeah. And then Bones knocks on the window.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then I thought, I was like, maybe Lewis understood and he's actually coming to save the day.
The blind man.
But then it was Andrew's favorite character, Deputy Donuts.
Deputy Donuts. Mm-hmm. Do we know Deputy Donuts' actual name?
Oh. Did he even have a different name?
I hope he
did. Or was he just Deputy Donuts?
No, for sure he does.
There should be a Deputy Donuts sandwich.
Oh, it's not good.
Oh.
It's Deputy Ted.
Oh, no.
Deputy Donut is so much better.
Deputy Donut.
There are a lot of really weird names. Who's Mr. Oh, never mind. It's Mr. Tuttle. I thought it said Mr. Turtle. And I was like, who was in charge of naming people in this movie? Scott Frank. You were really working on weird stuff before Logan Wolverine.
Chris Pratt, though. Like, honestly, gee.
It kind of bothered me knowing that his name was Chris Pratt because all I could picture was, like, actual Chris Pratt.
Oh, it was super funny every time.
Yeah.
Anytime they said Chris Pratt, it was like, oh, this is a comedy movie.
I was like desperately trying not to remember that his name was Chris Pratt for that reason because mm-hmm. I kept getting distracted.
They kept saying it. So like, I feel like they knew.
You know what? Maybe that's why they chose it. They just wanted to mess with every single person that watches that movie.
When Chris was playing like the hockey game at the bank when he first gets to the bank, job and he like tips over the garbage can and starts like playing with his broom playing hockey. I really hope that it'd be like a Goon crossover scene. You could easily just like splice all the Winnipeg movies together.
Probably.
Yeah.
Actually, that reminds me. I'm almost positive that I've played hockey in that hockey arena that they filmed it in. Because it looks like a barn and it's got like those big wooden panels and it like meets up at the top in like a point kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like a barn.
Yeah. I've seen a barn.
But, like, when I, if I'm remembering this correctly, it is so cold in that arena because, like, it's just, like, a thin layer of, like, wood. It's basically, like, paper. That's not true. But it's so cold in there when it's, like, minus 30 or minus 40 outside, and my hands would freeze every time. So I wonder if they had any problems when they were shooting, like, with the cold and the temperature inside of that. I'm assuming that must be in Harney, Manitoba.
Yeah.
Maybe I haven't played hockey there then. If I've never heard of. I keep on saying Harney also.
Is it Harney? Harney? Yeah,
Harney?
Hartney.
There's a T.
Hartney,
Manitoba.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that for sure looks like a lot of rinks that I've seen in Manitoba anyway.
Yeah. Oh, and the bartender, like when Chris like is at the bar and first meets Gary, and the bartender's a real jerk. He like completely rips Chris off, right? He like takes like a $14
tip.
That is my roommate's best friend's dad. So,
is it?
A little bit of Winnipeg right there.
Interesting.
And he was a terrible person.
Yeah, a huge jerk.
I felt really bad that Chris was like really wanted to be a teller and then he just sucks with money.
It's kind of sad. At the end when the bank manager like tells him, you gave me $1 too many in change.
Yeah, I know. That was the
and
worst.
I was like, oh, it's like Chris
is
Pratt,
making no
so
progress. No progress at all. I was really, like, intrigued right from the beginning, though, because I noticed right away that everything in the house was labeled.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, why is it labeled? What happened? And I guess it's for Chris, because it wouldn't be for Lewis.
Lewis
no,
can't
read
it.
Yeah, and because at first I was like, is this, like, a thing where they're like, this is for Lewis, and it's just not Braille? because they like they didn't take the time to make cheap. Braille stuff. But I was like, oh no, I guess it's for Chris. And then I was also really confused why I kept on saying, I wake up, I wake up, I wake up. Uh-huh. And then like it must have been like 20 minutes later in the movie where he finally goes, oh yeah, I fall asleep all the time. Which is also a super important detail because he falls asleep and has that dream.
Yeah.
About the Millennium Library. We're all dreaming about the Millennium Library. That's the truth. That's where most of my dreams are set.
Another thing that bothered me was how nobody ever stole his car.
Like broke the window?
Oh, yeah.
Because the keys were in it.
First of all, every day he leaves his key in there.
Hilarious.
So you'd think you'd write it in your little book.
Don't forget keys and car.
Right. Whatever. I'll let it by. But there's no way he parks his car in anywhere, any city in the world with the keys in the door or keys in the ignition and nobody takes it eventually.
I mean, at least he was smart enough to bring the extra key in his sock.
Yeah, and it's outside of his little, like, special development school.
But, like, I don't know. Like, if you can remember that you have that extra key in your shoe, can you just remember the key in the first place?
Well, you can feel it. True. You ever put, like, a rock in your shoe? It's like hell.
I've never purposely put a rock
in your shoe. How do the doors lock if the keys are in it?
It's an older car, so you can... I think it's probably, like, a manual lock.
So he, like... is in the car, locks the door.
And closes it.
And closes it?
Yeah. I imagine.
What?
Yeah.
Is that a thing that happens?
Older cars, yeah.
Oh, well.
Like without electronic locking, yeah.
I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he should just label his car or write it down somewhere.
Like put a little note on the window that says, take keys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? Himself. Andrew has convinced me. What a terrible movie.
That one little detail ruined the movie for me.
Put me over the edge. I went from 10 out of 10 to 0.
Wow, yeah. The tables have turned. The first episode you guys had to convince me that Goon wasn't an awful movie, and now we have to convince you that it is an awful movie, that this one is.
Yeah.
play Circle of Life, like right now.
Oh my God. No, but all in all though, I think like as much as we can like go to these little details and these little plot holes and stuff like that, I am only thinking of that, like, now. After watching the movie, I had none of this. After watching the movie, I was like, that was a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
I felt pretty good about it. And I was actually pretty, like, that was one where I was like, I am proud that this was filmed in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was genuinely surprised. And I was, like, kind of finding ways to hate it just to, like, you know, just kind of have something to talk about. But I couldn't. I generally love the movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would watch it again.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm for sure going to tell my dad to watch it.
Yeah. I don't think I'll recommend. But my roommates, they liked it. So.
Except for two of them.
Well, two of them just hate Winnipeg a lot. All of them hate Winnipeg a lot. But they liked, And Joseph Gordon-Levitt did not carry a messenger bag in this one. He carried a backpack, though.
Oh, yeah. Okay, he's always tell everybody about your theory.
I have this theory that in every Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie, he carries a messenger bag. He really rocks a messenger bag. It's a good look for him. But in this one, he had a school bag, though. But, I mean, he was going to school, so it made sense.
He's got, like, a pretty cool, like, thing going on with that, what is it called, Record? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has, like, his own website where people can contribute, like, clips or, like, bits of music or songs or, like, all these different things. And, like, he uses that kind of stuff to, like, create stuff. So like, you know the movie Don John?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's like where that came from. Like it was a project with like, it's like Hit Record or something like that.
Really?
Yeah. Give me 2 seconds. I'm gonna find it. I should have done this beforehand because I knew I wanted to bring that up.
That's so cool.
Because whenever you see him in like appearances on like talk shows or like award ceremonies or something like that, you'll notice that he always has like this little red pin on his like lapels of his suit and stuff like that.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And that's for his website.
Mm.
Which is called it's called Hit Record, and it's an online production company.
Mm.
I don't know if Don John came out of there.
Good job.
Wasn't Don John really bad?
I haven't seen Don John.
Seems gross
for a movie review podcast.
No, okay. Yeah. Mm. Don John, which came out in 2013, was a feature film that was a product of Hit Record. And there's a bunch of short films and stuff like that. And yeah, he like, everybody gets credited and like, it's like people can submit all different types of things to be like collaborators on these things. So yeah, it's a really cool project that he started. He's a pretty interesting guy.
He is.
Yeah.
Definitely very cool.
For a movie review podcast, we quite often say, I haven't seen that movie before. Just putting that out there.
Yeah.
We really do.
Well, we watch the Winnipeg movies.
That's ones, all that matters.
Yeah, we watch good films, a.k.a. movies filmed in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Contrary to what CJ says.
Yeah.
I had one note that I wrote down, and I cannot remember what actually happened. Because all I have wrote down is the quote, oh, well, you better carry me. Cannot remember what happened there.
Oh,
I know it was
funny. Yeah, that one was.
He said that to the brother. Yeah. Because the brother was like.
Like grabbing his arm and like really leading him. Like, oh, guy's blind. I got to hold on to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's right. I remember seeing that and I like wrote it down. I was looking at while we were talking. I was like, I cannot remember.
That was funny.
Oh, also, for location and stuff. Because I didn't notice a whole lot, the one random thing I did notice was the cross of the Calvary Temple in the window of a building. Like, it's not even the actual cross. It's a reflection of the cross.
Yeah.
Somehow I recognized that.
Yeah. I thought that was a really pretty scene. I liked that.
Yeah, the neon lights and the reflection.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
That was cool. And him just, like, sitting on that chair.
Okay, there was no way in my mind, the same way that the movie started with the car scene with the teenagers, and I was like, automatically, I was like, someone's about to die.
Yeah.
Also, when he was like trying to cook the spaghetti sauce, and I was like, "Oh, he's about to burn his apartment down," because he like turns on the oven, and it's like one of those old ovens where flames come out of it, and I was like, "Well, this is just dangerous." One, because Gordon Joseph Levitt is like not capable of doing anything apparently, according to this movie, and he's about to use this flame, and then also it's like a blind guy's apartment, like somebody who's blind. I feel like that would be really dangerous, like, because they could just have, like, the, you know, the sleeve of their jacket or something like that. And I was really worried about, I for sure thought the apartment was going to burn down by the end of the movie, but it did not. And I was happy because it showed me that people are a lot more capable than I thought they were.
Yes.
And it was my fault for being judgmental and presumptuous.
Lifelong lesson.
Yeah.
One last little fun fact. To help him play a brain-damaged man, apparently Joseph Gordon-Levitt wouldn't sleep very much the night before and, like, would work out at the gym to make him kind of seem disoriented. Hmm. He also apparently befriended people with brain damage and read The Man with a Shattered World, The History of a Brain Wound.
Ooh.
This is all off of IMDb trivia?
Absolutely.
So it's 100% true.
The amount of times we bring up IMDb, we're about to get a sponsorship.
Oh, yeah. Sponsor us, IMDb.
Sponsored by IMDb
and Rotten Tomatoes.
Rotten Tomatoes.
No, Rotten Tomatoes will be like, we don't want this David guy.
All right. So, as usual, we're going to end the podcast with out of 5 rating for how good the movie was, out of 5 rating for how recognizably Winnipeg it was, and a brief little log line that we all make up. So, David, would you like to start?
What part do I start with?
Whatever makes you happiest.
Well, you make me happiest. So why don't we start with you? No, okay. You do make me happy, though. So for recognizably Winnipeg, I gave it a 4.5 out of 5 because I was like left, right, center, just like, this is Winnipeg, this is Winnipeg, this is Winnipeg the whole time. Like, comparing to the other movies that we watched, this one, I was like, for sure, I recognize it. But that's not saying much because I don't really recognize anything. For the movie itself, I gave it a 4 out of 5. I thought it was good. I think for people who like action movies, heist movies, it's like a pretty good one to watch. Got a little bit of a more serious narrative kind of like going on underneath, which is something that's enjoyable. So I'm definitely going to recommend it to a few of my friends, a couple of my family members. And my log line is, Jordan Gosef Levitt miraculously does not have his Jetta stolen in the streets of Winnipeg in this heist movie where he could have seen the red flags way sooner than when the heist was already happening. That's it.
Good.
Good stuff.
Jen, would you like to go next?
Sure. So I gave the movie a 4 out of 5. I really liked it. It was really good. Good pacing and stuff. For recognizably Winnipeg, though, I only gave it a 2, and that's, again, just probably because I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention, or I just don't recognize stuff. Because for me, it was mainly, like, when I saw street signs, or, like, at one point they mentioned Waverly Street, and I saw, like, Market, and then I saw Cumberland, and so, like, I knew those ones, but other than that, I didn't really recognize a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
And my log line is Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays Chris Pratt. No, not that Chris Pratt. A brain-damaged former jock who regrettably helps some random guys rob a bank and then returns all the money anyway.
True. That's a very good log line.
We never even talked about how they were so dumb robbing the bank that they cut the phone line and not the camera line. And, like, the whole bank heist was recorded.
Also how the cops were like, ah, you couldn't plan this. You're free to go.
Yeah. They're like... Silly brain injury.
Okay, yeah. Zoe, would you like to go next?
I did, for recognizably Winnipeg, I did 4.5 out of 5.
Holy smokes.
I just, I mean, can't get any more recognizable than that.
Except for 5.
Yeah.
Except for that.
Guess so. And then for just, like, overall rating, I said 3.5 out of 5, because, like, yeah, like, I don't think I'd watch it again, but, yeah, like, I got through it. It was nice. It was definitely my favorite out of all the ones we've watched so far.
Yeah, that's the highest rating you've given, for sure.
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, for my log line, kind of similar to Jen's, Chris Pratt helps rob a bank. No, not that Chris Pratt. And that's it. Short and sweet.
Nice.
Good. Very good. I gave it a 3 out of 5 for overall. I think it was good, but it wasn't, like, good enough. It was kind of missing, like, a little step on some, like, plot points.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if, you know, they made it 15, 20 minutes longer, brand new movie, I think I would have given it at least a 4.5.
Nice.
For recognizably Winnipeg, I gave it a 2.5. I actually noticed some things this time, so... Props to them, but...
Props to you.
Yeah, give yourself credit. Good for you.
Thank you, thank you. I pat myself on the back. But yeah, like, I don't know. Clearly, I'm just terrible at recognizing Winnipeg, so 2.5. And my log line is Star-Lord recklessly... Sorry.
Nice. I like it already.
Star-Lord recklessly crashes his car trying to impress his girlfriend and decides to rob a bank to open a sandwich shop.
Nice.
That is the best one.
That's the best one. Good
job. Yeah, big fan. Andrew's writing the log lines for every movie now for Scott Frank.
Oh, yeah.
Frank Scott?
Frank.
Scott Frank.
Mike Scott?
Is it Scott Frank?
Oh, I'm doing really bad with names in this episode.
It is. I'm just...
Too many.
Oh, it is?
It is.
Okay, thank God.
Oh, man.
For this week of the behind the scenes of Behind the Screens, we're going to cut to a clip of myself interviewing someone for my article. So I just have one question left. What have you learned from this class that you think will make you successful in the future in this industry?
I think telling people a story. It seems corny, but people have tried it, know that it's harder than that. You have to make something people want to watch. You can't just throw things in order and expect a story to come out of it. I think Mr. Cardinal is good at teaching us that. Hopefully I can use it one day to make things something others are going to see.
Thanks again. One quick one, though. Do you know what you'd want to do once you're done school? Like, what do you want to do for a job?
Hopefully working with a sports team somewhere. They do a lot of cool stuff, and I've played sports my whole life, so I think it's a good fit.
And that was the final episode for season one of Behind the Screens podcast.
It's been an emotional ride, guys.
We've had our ups and downs.
A lot of downs.
A lot of downs.
We've seen a few dogs die.
Uh-huh.
We've seen a few cops die.
Oh, no.
and cop dogs.
I was going to say, we've seen cop dogs die, too.
There was not a single movie that was not violent.
Oh, we are violent people.
Somebody dies in every... No, I guess not in Goon. Somebody almost
Well,
dies
they
in Goon.
Shut up. Wow. There's a lot of blood in that movie.
Yeah.
And, like, some of that gore was almost worse than some of the deaths, though. So that could count.
Yeah.
Yeah. Best... We should vote on best death of season one of Behind the Screens.
And, you know, murder capital of the country or whatever.
Yeah, it's very fitting.
Yeah.
Okay, everyone, quick best death of season one. And a quick, like, two-word why it's the best.
Okay. Best death of season one of Behind the Screens is the dog and the dog's purpose.
Which dog?
the police dog.
Okay.
Because Zoe was very upset. And that was something that I enjoyed.
Thanks, David. Zoe upset. Thank you. I'm going to say Deputy Donuts dying. Because he just had a kid. And that just really touched me. It was really emotional.
Yeah, it was pretty sad.
Yeah. I'm also stealing David's, but it's for a bit of a different reason.
Yeah, I'm joking, obviously. I was not happy when the dog died.
Zoe didn't like it. But it made me really sad. I was like, no. Yeah. And then the guy was so upset about it because it's like, it's his dog, it's his partner. And it's, oh my God.
That was actually Deputy Donut's cousin, Deputy Croissant.
How about that?
I think I'm going to go with also dog's purpose, but when the original dog, like the original Bailey. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Not because it was like memorable, but because it was like the saddest, I think. It was very, very sad. That was like the first dog you kind of like connected with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I say best death, I mean saddest death. Also, just to clarify.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we enjoyed watching them die.
We enjoyed watching all these dogs die.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that is it. That was season one of Behind the Screens podcast. We will keep you updated on Twitter when season two is going to come out.
Yeah, I think it's going to be one of those things where we like, there's a lot of fighting going on behind the scenes. And that's why it's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm Andrew.
I'm Zoe.
I'm Jen.
And I'm still David.
Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Shut her down.